Welcome back, friends. In this episode, we're going to take up the third plank, radical evolutionism. Hegel is who I think Pius has in his mind. And we're going to note that evolution doesn't just stop in the halls of science. It quickly marches through to evolution of dogma. And frankly, I just heard that term just yet again, that the church needs to evolve.
Yeah, the church needs to evolve.
Okay. The church needs to evolve. The third plank in the modernist platform is the radical evolutionism of Hegel, the first great philosopher of history. So back to this philosophy. So that the introduction, philosophy, religion, vital immanence, that we're all subject, and now science, radical evolution. Where Kant made all things static, Hegel introduced a dynamic element into his metaphysics like Heraclitus. And in fact, I do have a series of talks where I talk about the pre-Socratics, because my gosh, that's what we're dealing with. And when Sarah was talking about that, these really aren't philosophers, these are sophists. True. I will put links to those essays, and they may be podcasts too for your edification, should you care to consult it. All right, back to for Hegel, all things evolve in the dialectic of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. History, truth, thought, indeed, all reality is explained by this principle. Truth evolves, Christ evolves. You know, let's think about it. In the history of thought, the Hegelian dialectic gives rise to historical consciousness. Remember, the primitive church gave rise to a church consciousness from that immanent, vital immanence. Yeah. Here we are, historical consciousness. It's an acute awareness of change as a constant, describing all reality as in continual development. It further produces historicism, the theory in which general laws of historical development are the determinant of events. In this hit, so it's history is how life is determined, right?
And it's always very interesting because anybody who is an actual studier of history recognizes that history is not evolutionary in the sense that it's constantly moving forward to a better good.
That is right.
History is circular or spiral, but it's never progressive, and it's never necessarily moving, because the belief is that history, that man is moving from a period of lower capabilities to a period of higher capabilities. But it depends upon how one defines lower and higher in regards to that.
That's exactly right.
And who is the arbiter of deciding what's good? Who makes the decision as to whether or not, I mean, certainly man has become extremely effective at war, right? Once upon a time, man had to stand on a battlefield with a club in his hand, and he had to fight the guy, you know, by sheer power. Right. But now we can send drones that can do those things, and man is safe. So does that now mean that man has become better at fighting war? Is war more just now? Can you truly argue at that point that there is a cause for a just war if no individual person stands in immediate harm? So all of these questions that they bring in regards to the progressiveness of history have to be looked at not simply from a standpoint of mechanical progress.
That is correct.
Because yes, I guess you could say mechanical progress is moving forward, but can does not mean should, and frequently doesn't.
And frequently doesn't.
Something doesn't mean you should. So if you divorce history from morality, all that you're going to have is totalitarian man controlling the weakest among us.
That is correct. That is correct. So we want to note the application of Darwinism, an unproven theory, to fields far removed from natural science. So Darwinism did not stay confined to, are we all derived from amoeba out of a mud pit somewhere? No, we're now into history. We're into morality. We're into dogma and church. Very far indeed removed from the field of the natural order. Hegel's evolutionary dialectic is adapted to modernism in this wise. By vital immanence, the mind of the believer asserts things, certain things to be true. So, you know, it feels right to me, so therefore it's true. I have heard that. I just heard it last week. Sure. You know, I don't really believe that. Why? Because that's how they felt.
Right. No, I don't. Okay.
Then upon reflection, he, modernist, states what he holds in secondary formula, which we call dogmas. And these become subject to a continued process of evolution. When the early Christians collectively asserted their faith, the church, a democratic product of the collective consciousness, was born. See, that's, we get the creed because of a vote, or
yeah,
ascent of the of those.
The ascent of the faithful, yeah. Ascent, and that's why, I mean, that's why, you know, talk about right there, James Martin, you know, humanae vitae has not received the ascent of the faithful, ergo humanae vitae is not true. No, I mean, truth does not reside by popular vote.
No.
You know? Who is the great, I don't know, it's a line that goes around the Facebook all the time, you know, just because something is not true because everyone believes it, and something's not false because no one does. I don't, it's, I'm paraphrasing, but it's, yeah, it's very true. Truth, I mean, and it's so amazing to me that we could have become, once again, that's why I think, you know, history is not linear. It's not an uphill progression that we're getting smarter and smarter and smarter, because these are things that Socrates wrangled with 400 years before Christ came. And that's why he
was so pivotal in human history, because contending with the pre-Socratics, Heracles, the Thomists, the one with the P, I'd have to go back. I should have refreshed my memory. I'll put it, believe me, I'll have a little note, the guy with the P, it's not Pythagoras.
Yeah. But he recognized the truth was resided outside of himself.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, and now, you know, that's why, I mean, it's just this arrogance of the modernist who wants to claim the rights of a wisdom that he does not possess. Yes, he has access to knowledge. He probably has more access to more knowledge than anyone has in prior history, but it has not done anything to, well, I shouldn't even say knowledge, access to information, but it has not made him wise. I mean, one has to argue, and it can be justly argued, that Saint Bernadette, who knew nothing in regards to the world of sciences, the natural world, was certainly far wiser than any of these people. And we know that to be true because we call her saint. We don't call Hegel saint. We don't call Kant saint. There is something defective, because the human person, we know from the Catechism, is made to know and love and serve God here on earth so as to be happy with him forever in heaven. And the way that we can recognize whether or not a person has achieved that level of truth and reality is because we confer upon them the name of blessed, venerable, blessed, or saint. And Hegel, none of these people have met the criteria for holiness that the church has set. So why do we give them any type of, any level of deference is beyond me.
Right. All right, my friends. We will pick up now the three planks and the effects of doctrines in terms of some of the heresies to be on guard against as we raise up those entrusted to us. To the next time, fides et ratio.